Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about faith, family, freedom, the state of Illinois, our nation, and conservative action. Here's David Smith and Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. I'm Monty Larrick. I'm joined by John Stonestreet. Mr. Stonestreet, a Chuck Colson Center for Worldview Fellow. His Breakpoint commentaries heard on more than 1,200 radio stations. He's a gifted writer and speaker, and we caught up with him at the 4th Annual Worldview Conference hosted by the Illinois Family Institute. John, why should Christians care about the culture? It appears we've lost. We have legal abortion, gay marriage, unisex bathrooms, so why bother on trying to change something that appears to be unchangeable?
Well, I think we care about culture not because we're winning or losing, but because it's what we're supposed to do as humans. And what Christians are, according to the biblical narrative, are redeemed humans. So what Christ saves us for is not different than what God created us for. God created us in his image, said to be fruitful, multiply, and do something with the world. And so that's what humans have always done. The question is, which direction are humans taking? And we certainly see a lot of bad news, but we also see a lot of good news. In my recent book, Restoring All Things, my co-author Warren Smith and I told stories of 14 different areas of culture where Christians are engaged in culture and education and dealing with poverty and dealing with the victims of the sexual revolution and dealing with victims of abortion, both in terms of fighting for the life of the unborn as well as helping mothers and fathers who are also victims of this really bad idea, and 10 or 12 other areas of culture. And Christians doing amazing things to change lives. And so we engage in culture not to ultimately win. Culture always ebbs and flows. We do it because it's a matter of Christian faithfulness.
You mentioned something about being fruitful and multiply, and I think for a lot of Christians, they maybe hesitant to have more kids these days with what they see out there happening. What would you say to that?
Well, the only way to change, I don't think that's specifically just a reference on having babies, although I think we should have babies. Certainly when you try to impose ideology on human procreation, you get what we see in China, you get what we see in India, gendercide, the reversal of the economic pyramid and all sorts of things. So the overpopulation myth has been proven just that, a myth. And there's some real issues with folks not having enough babies. But also it's because of this. If you want to see the future different, the only way to do it is multi-generationally. And God has taken care of his people in much worse cultural scenarios and cultural moments than the one that we face.
What's the next big cultural shift on the horizon?
Well, it's a good question. I'm not a prophet, and I don't claim to be. I will say that what we're dealing with right now is the wake of the sexual revolution. It's been one of the most sweeping, successful cultural revolutions the world has seen, certainly that we've seen in our lifetime. It's been more powerful than any other revolution centered on economics or centered on all kinds of other things. It's just been amazing in terms of how many areas of culture it shifted. So my guess is we're going to continue to see that revolution play itself out, which we're living kind of at the downstream from that. The problem is that revolution, as well as some of the other things that we're facing, it denies reality. There's some givens in the world that the sexual revolution denies, the inherent connection of sex, marriage, and babies, the distinction between male and female, and so on. And you can't step off the roof and choose not to hit the ground, right? You can only say gravity doesn't exist, you know, on your way down. Once you hit the ground, you can't say that anymore. These ideas have consequences. And so one of the things we might be facing is a real reckoning where we see these ideas give birth, and they're not going to give birth to life, they're going to give birth to death, and Christians are going to find themselves, hopefully, and I think honestly, one of the ways we can stay engaged in culture is caring for the victims of these bad ideas, and that's going to have to be a shift that takes place in the church, but it's going to bring a lot of fruit, I think.
My fear would be, and I think a lot of other people would fear, is that with these changes, the church will be on the sidelines.
Well, we're already there, so that's not going to be new. It might just be more intensified. The marginalization of Christian truth claims and Christian faith to most of life has already happened. It's the society has become fully secular in many, many ways. whether we stay on the sidelines or not, that's not up to the culture. That's up to us. And I think that's the game we're trying to keep Christians in, is that, you know, we might be forced from the sidelines when it comes to decision-making at a government level, when it comes to policy-making within institutions. But whether we choose to care and love our neighbor and whether we choose to remain silent or speak up, that's going to be up to us. The question is, we're going to have to, as the scripture says, count the cost. Are we willing to speak up, even if we're going to pay for it in some sort of way? A church that's only speaks up when it's in the power center of culture is not the real church. Most of the history of the church has been lived on the margins, and maybe it's our turn. I'm not celebrating this. I certainly don't wish persecution or discrimination or anything like that on anyone, but it's just the reality. Whether we speak up or not, it's going to be up to us, not the culture.
Speaking of defending the faith, defending religious freedom is under even more intense attack in recent years here. Maybe we've got a little bit of reprieve from the Trump administration, but when you think of religious freedom, what do you think? The left say, well, that's a license to discriminate.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the branding right now. That's a real problem, and it comes from a number of places. Number one is the cultural imagination on when people hear religious freedom. It used to be that's kind of a good thing, kind of like, you know, it's very American, baseball, apple pie, but it's not anymore. It's, like you said, it's become a synonym for license to discriminate. The other part of this that makes this a very difficult moment when it comes to religious freedom is that 50% of Americans think that if Christians and Christian institutions disappeared from the scene, that the government would just pick up all the services that they offer. Now, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. I mean, that's physically impossible. 11% of hospitals are Catholic in America. They couldn't replace those 11% of hospitals, not to mention the Methodist hospitals, the Baptist hospitals, the Mennonite hospitals, the Lutheran hospitals, and the Adventist hospitals, and all the other hospitals. And so that's the... that's the assumption, is that the government can do what the church used to do. So
how do we go about changing that point of view?
Well, I think we've got to change the imagination, I think we also need to hold the line for as long as possible. I think you're right. This administration has proven, at least in areas of religious liberty, to give us a reprieve. And there was but the ongoing collision is with the wake of the sexual revolution. So what do we do? Number one is we learn how to articulate why religious freedom was part of the American experiment and why it was a good thing. Number two, we need to articulate and be able to have conversations with our friends and our neighbors across Thanksgiving tables and, as Chuck Colson would say, around the barbecue grill, about why religious freedom is a good thing for everyone, not just for Christians, but it's actually part of something that brings life to the world, that you can't really have freedom without virtue. You can't really have virtue without freedom, and so on. That these three things, religion, virtue, and freedom, are a package deal. And it's what Os Guinness calls the golden triangle of freedom. But finally, one of the things we've got to do is choose, even if we're being pushed to the margins, to go back to that point, to go in and serve. Listen, we can be as winsome and as loving and as caring as we want, and it doesn't mean we won't still be thought of as the bigots and the haters of this age. So winsome is not going to work in the long run for everything. But I tell you what, it doesn't matter. We have to go and continue to serve. We've got to go and show that Christians not only believe things, they live out their faith. There was a great moment last year in culture, cover of the USA Today after Hurricane Harvey decimated Houston, that and there's the headline, 80% of resources from FEMA are delivered through the hands of nonprofit organizations, most of them religious ones. It's great. I mean, so for the secularists that are saying, keep your faith to yourself, really? Is that what you really, do you really want? Because it was not keeping faith to themselves that led to all those Southern gentlemen jumping in their boats and going in and rescuing people from the floods. I mean, that's where that comes from. It's not keeping faith to yourself that puts Samaritan's Purse and Convoy of Hope and all of these other organizations that are on the scene before the government can get there, and are organized before the government can get organized, that take those resources and actually provide real help and real aid to thousands and thousands. So being able to do that, and I think the rest of us have to point to that and say that's why we do it. We don't do it because we're nice. We do it because we deeply believe it. In the same way, we believe what we believe about marriage, about sexuality, about life, not because, you know, we want to just impose our views, but because we really believe it. And so both apologetics in word and apologetics in action, I think, is what's needed.
This is Illinois Family Spotlight. More John Stone Street from the IFI Worldview Conference after this.
This is Jerry Boyer for townhall.com. A recent article in The New Yorker decried the opening of a fourth Chick-fil-A restaurant in Manhattan. The author called it a, quote, creepy infiltration because of what he calls the company's, quote, pervasive Christian traditionalism, evidenced by the fact that the headquarters in Atlanta features a statue of Jesus washing his disciples' feet and that the stores are closed on Sunday. Pretty creepy stuff. The New Yorker certainly has the right to publish articles with a secular point of view, but New York was founded by Dutch Calvinist merchants, and some 60% of New Yorkers still self-identify as Christian. The foot-washing episode inspired John Locke to teach the doctrine of religious liberty, which influenced our own First Amendment. So the scene which offends the New York press today is what led to the freedom which enables that same press to deride it. Maybe it's the New Yorker that's kind of creepy. I'm Jerry Boyer.
The Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy, impacting policy decisions today, preparing public leaders for tomorrow.
Protect life. Protect privacy. Tell your state representative to vote no on the Equal Rights Amendment.
Wake up and realize how overreaching this amendment is.
Elise spoke with Stop ERA warns the Planned Parenthood-backed amendment will enshrine taxpayer-funded, unrestricted abortions into the Constitution.
The ERA absolutely mandates full access to abortion.
And while the Constitution already guarantees equal protections regardless of sex, ratification of the ERA will put privacy at risk.
Everything would have to be unisex. Locker rooms, bathrooms, hospital rooms.
Call today and tell your state representative to vote no on the ERA. The state capitol switchboard number is 217-782-2000. 217-782-2000. For lawmaker information, visit IllinoisFamily.org and click Officials Finder.
Thanks once again for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. I'm Monty Larrick. Here's part of my conversation with author and commentator John Stone Street from the IFI Worldview Conference. Well, here in Illinois, we have taxpayer-funded abortions. We have pro-life doctors, health professionals, and pregnancy care centers now will be forced, if the courts don't intervene, to give abortion referrals. How do we counter that? When is it right for Christians to engage in civil disobedience?
Yeah, that's a great question. You guys have been on a roll here lately. I mean, I've been watching California, and you guys are competing with in terms of these conscience rights. Look, I'm hopeful of what the Supreme Court's going to decide, at least on abortion referrals from pro-life organizations. I think the oral arguments went very well for Mike Ferris and ADF in the California case, and I imagine that'll have implications here for Illinois. Let's pray that they do. But your question still stands, because that's just one issue on life. I kind of see those sorts of cases when it comes to abortion and life as kind of the last-ditch effort of people who are losing, the pro-abortion side. When it comes to sexuality and marriage, we're on the other side of the cultural balance there.
Especially among millennials.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think so. There needs to be some discussion about civil disobedience. Chuck Colson talked about it. It was one of his most watched YouTube videos. You can still find it on YouTube before he passed away. And, of course, that was 2011, probably, when that was out. We need a theology of when to get fired. And it may be, I spoke at a Christian college a couple months ago, and it was a typical Christian college, which means it probably costs $35,000 to $40,000 a year when you throw everything in. I said, you know, you guys might be paying $120,000 to $160,000 for 4 years to learn how to do a job or to go into an area of work or a vocation where the most important thing you can do to love and follow Jesus is to get fired. These are calculations we don't make anymore. These are calculations that our brothers and sisters on the other side of the world make all the time. And I'm not wishing that on them. God give North Korean believers rest. God give, you know, Iraqi and Syrian believers peace. There is a cost to following Jesus. There hasn't been for us for a long time. And we stay in the game. We stay engaged. But you count the cost. And I think that might be an important topic of conversation for churches to have, for small groups to have, for pastors to have with their people. It's been historically a part of the Christian life for almost every generation of Christians, except for us.
Here in Illinois, lawmakers are set on trying to legalize recreational marijuana. There are a lot of implications and negative consequences of that, but what do you see as the threat to God's redemptive plan if we go ahead and legalize recreational marijuana?
Yeah, well, there's no threat to God's redemptive plan, and the reason is because Christ is risen. So we have the end of the story, and wherever we're at in the moment, there's twists and turns, but I think we need to keep that in mind. It's never over. We've never lost. Christ is risen. He's Lord, and we need to stand on that. And sometimes those truths would seem like abstract theological concepts need to become groundings for us. But as someone from the state of Colorado, don't legalize recreational marijuana. It was one of those things that was really sold on a false vision of the good life with a promise of a whole lot of money. And anytime a public policy is based on economic windfall, you know, basically a poor man's tax or a dumb man's tax, then it's not in the public good. But that's really the problem. The problem is not a legislator passing a law. That's a fruit. The root is way upstream. And what is true? What is good? What is beautiful? What are we for? What does it mean to be human? What are we alive for? And marijuana and all kinds of, you know, drugs like that, they actually take our attention off what we're actually made for. So I think at one level, Christians need to get better at talking about what the faith is for, not just what we're against in culture, but kind of the vision of life and flourishing that Jesus talked about. But that's what it does. It incentivizes inactivity. It incentivizes what I call in my book, Practical Guide to Culture, a perpetual adolescence. And it actually incentivizes that by the state. What you're in for is an uncontrollable thing. You can't keep it out of the schools. You can't keep it in the state, not across state lines. You can't keep it from the roads. You can't keep it from families. And this is not something to deliver to your constituents on the promise of a whole lot of money.
So what should Christians do here in Illinois to counter this drive toward legalization?
Well, I tell you what, in the 2016 election, the only socially liberal or progressive ballot initiative that failed was recreational marijuana in Arizona. I mean, even though the elections went conservative, all the ballot initiatives state by state went progressive, whether it's doctor-assisted suicide in, I think, California and, in Florida. And is that right? I might be getting that wrong. There was something in Florida. There was something in California. There's always something in California. Right. But Arizona was pushing it. And what they did is they looked at our state. So that's one thing people can do is come to Colorado, talk to the law enforcement folks, look at what Arizona did in terms of the Council for Arizona Policy and other groups with how they actually portrayed this. It was really impressive because what they did is they told in kind of a prudential way, here's what the social costs are going to be. You're getting promised this amount of money, but the social costs outweigh that. So that's how you do it on a public level. But I tell you what, every parent, every Christian needs to be willing to articulate that to their kids. And in Arizona, this was really amazing. And I come at this as someone who in 2016, tried to turn back doctor-assisted suicide in the state of Colorado. And I couldn't get pastors to talk about it. I tried, and pastors said it's political. For some reason, in Arizona, pastors talked about recreational marijuana, and I think it's school children. That's the angle, and I think it really causes great havoc in the schools. It can't be kept out of the schools. This is not your grandfather's Cheech and Chong pot. This is very, very potent, and it's in the form of edibles. So you make those cases, and I think you can actually make a difference on this one.
Let's plug your book.
Hey, please plug my book.
Okay. You've got this new book out, A Practical Guide to Culture. It's a must read.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I wrote the book because I have four kids, and my co-author helped me, and he and I worked together on this because he has five kids, and we're dads. We're in this too. So we're in a culture that's dramatically changing. It feels like maybe, you know, the tide is against us in so many ways, but we can't choose to live in another culture. We can't magically go back to, you know, the 50s or the 60s or whatever we're looking for. And so helping our kids navigate this culture, specific issues are dealt with in the book, specific macro trends are dealt with in the book, and that's really what it's all about, is helping those who are speaking into the next generation.
Where can you buy it?
Well, you can buy it at the Colson Center, breakpoint.org, and click on the store button there. You can find it on Amazon, find it at Christian bookstores, and pretty easy to find.
All right. And how can folks connect with you?
Come to breakpoint.org. Eric Metaxas and I continue those Breakpoint commentaries that Chuck Colson started 25 years ago. We talk about the issues of the culture from a Christian worldview, helping Christians understand culture and then stay engaged. And that's really what we're about. But the website is breakpoint.org. If you can't find us on the radio, you can sign up to get Breakpoint sent to you by email. You can also find us on a podcast, the Breakpoint Podcast.
Thank you so much, John Stone Street, the author of a great new book, A Practical Guide to Culture. It's a must read. God bless you, John.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining Illinois Family Spotlight. Please tell your friends and relatives about Spotlight. And until next time, God bless.
Thank you for listening to Illinois Family Spotlight. For more information, please visit us at ifiaction.org. And look for us on Facebook and Twitter. If you would like to email us questions or comments, please do so at feedback@ifiaction.org. Until next time, stay engaged and keep your eyes on the prize.